Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And welcome. Elton Jim Toronto here, filling in for Nick DiGilio till 5 o'clock. Nice to be back at the helm here at this time of the I don't know, is it this time of the morning, this time of the evening, you name it. I don't know what it is, but it's a cool time. I love seeing Michigan Avenue with nobody on it. It is a weird, it's very weird to see the bustling Bull Mish, if you will, to be almost like Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise. Completely empty. In fact, I'm tempted to take a wireless mic and just walk in the middle of Michigan Avenue and just do the show walking down the middle of Michigan Avenue without any cars or any traffic. If you remember that film with Tom Cruise, he walks down, I don't know if it's Times Square, somewhere down Manhattan, with absolutely no traffic. You never see that, ever. I don't think it's ever been like that in the history of New York. But certainly at 2 a.m. or so here, right outside the Tribune Tower, it is like that. Now, I should say...
There may be a reason for that, too.
Why, is it closed? Is there a closing?
From what I'm looking at our Michigan Avenue camera, and it looks like there are barricades on the southbound side of Michigan Avenue.
Oh.
And I think traffic is being diverted off at Ohio, and I think Esmeralda knows.
Oh, well, I think what happened, the word got out that I'm filling in. And so there was a big influx of traffic for people that wanted to come down and see me live in the studio. And so I think the Chicago police have come by and said, well, we can't. This will wreak havoc. And we have to restore order to the city. So I think they may have just blocked off those streets so that we can continue with the show without any craziness going on outside. So I appreciate that from Chicago's finest. I certainly do like to see some people. But if it's in the benefit of the city and for peace and order, then I guess I will, you know, I will acquiesce to what the police say. But it is kind of eerie out here. But I'm sure by 5 o'clock. We will start to see some life. At this point, the life that we have in this studio here at WGN is, of course, you heard David Jennings, and Esmeralda Leon is with us, and producer today is Dan. Now, Dan.
Yes.
I've never worked with you before.
Right.
I've never even met you before in all my time here at WGN and your time here. So I always see your name, and from what I understand, Dan is the guy who writes the don't you write
the preview
of who's on
yes.
the next shows?
That is my job.
Yeah, so you did this one?
I did write that one,
nice,
yes.
And thank you for spelling my name correctly.
You're very welcome. It's
very
the least
nice.
I can do.
Yeah. So now, how do you say your last name? Is it Shagru?
Shagru.
Oh, it is Sh.
Yeah.
I had a feeling it was Sh, but I didn't want to say it and then be, although I just did. But it is Shagru.
Yep.
Even though it is
H.
spelled S-U-G.
Yes, much like sugar. There's an invisible H in there. That's what you'd like to joke.
Well, listen how you just, you know, equate yourself with a
yeah, exactly.
With a nice, sweet kind of
thing. Yes.
Yeah. You didn't say, you know, something bad. You said sugar. There's a lot of SH words. There's one SH word you could have said that is not as sweet as sugar. You didn't choose that word.
I did not go that route.
We would have had to have dumped it anyway,
right,
bleeped it.
Right. FCC.
But it's interesting how you picked the sugar as opposed to the sh word.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
So somebody has a... I thought I had a high idea of myself. Yeah, exactly. But wow. So right here in the studio tonight, you could just feel the narcissism and ego dripping
right.
out of this studio. And as I said, Nick, I know, usually does the show upstairs.
Right.
And but I love the Showcase studio, the Allstate Showcase studio. I love the window. I've always said for the many years, well, not many, but enough that I worked here, it was the best office view in the city. And so now that word is out, and then sadly that the Tribune Tower has been sold, and WGN will be moving to another location. Whenever I'm here, I'm sitting in the Showcase studio because I want to get my fill out of this place. It Oh, there's somebody that got through the barricade. One person got through the barricade. There's one of my fans. Oh, no. I'm sorry. That's a security guard for the Tribune.
He still could be a fan.
Well, he could be. But I haven't paid him yet. So he's not a fan yet until he gets his $10. That's usually the way I get my fans. I'm not adverse to paying. I'm not adverse. So anyway, what I'm excited about is not only today's show, but for the one a few times of doing my filling in, I'm doing 2 days in a row. So I'm very excited about that prospect to be doing both this morning and then tomorrow at 2 to 5, filling in for Nick DiGilio, Walk of Famer. And so we can actually build a little rapport here. So I'm actually looking forward to that. And so if you are a third shifter, if you are an insomniac, if you are a newborn or a new parent with a newborn who decides to get up every day sometime between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m., or if you're just someone who likes to listen to the radio, we certainly welcome you here for the next 3 hours or so, and we'll take it up till 5. We got some fun things planned here. As you know, if you've listened to me in the past, I certainly like to have some things in my back pocket, but at the same time, always like to go with the flow. And but we do have a few things. What I do want to talk about, as I said with Patty earlier, is this is the first week we have now completed. We will have completed, I believe, today as the day progresses here. Week one of the soda pop tax, and so I did want to talk a little bit about that. But I also want to talk about I'll admit I will be a little self-serving here. Over the last week, as will radio personalities, the good old radio stunt is still not dead. And so apparently when the pop tax went into effect, several radio stations around the city were doing various types of stunts to play into the potential public outrage about this. And I do have outrage myself, which I will get into. But I want to lay ownership to a bit that I believe, or at least I've been told, that some radio brethren here in the city basically ripped off from me, and I've got the evidence to prove it. So I'm going to lay claim, even though that's the disadvantage of not being on all the time. You sort of get these ideas, you throw them out there, but if you're not there to lay claim to them, then they're out there, and people can just take them for themselves. And believe me, radio people are known to, in quotes, borrow much from each other. But I'm going to stake claim, and I'll have the proof for that. And also talk about how I beat the pop tax during this last week. And later on in the show, there was an interesting story as we're beginning an interesting time in the sporting world, in that within another month or so, we're going to have almost all of our sports beginning in some way or another. Obviously, baseball is in full swing. Football now has started with training camp and preseason. Within another month and a half or so, we're going to start to get a preseason for the Blackhawks and preseason for basketball. So sports is in the air. And so there was an interesting story in the Trib over the weekend about the best Chicago sports songs. And so I saw the list. And once again, if you know me, I immediately disagreed with the list. And so I will not only go over the list that was listed in the Chicago Tribune, but then I will give you the definitive list, according to an Elton Jim. And later in the program, we'll also have a performer named Ken Franklin, who has written a Cubs song. And everybody sort of has been jumping on the bandwagon with the success of the Cubs in their World Series win last year. And so we'll have him on to talk about his song, because he hopes that his song will get into that top 10 someday. So that whole lot more. We're here till 5. I'm going to be here till 5. I hope you will too. Phone number is 312-981-7200 if you want to chime in at any time. Please feel free. I'm going to use before I go to break, I'm going to use a great line. I was talking about being on in the wee hours, and then a good loyal listener, Eric the Undertaker, who used to call back in the good old days, said, "For me, 3 in the morning is the wee hours." Ba-rum-bum. So I like that. We are in this is the wee hour show, if you know what I mean. Elton Jim here at WGN Radio, no switching.
Have you ever felt a southern night?
Elton Jim Toronto here, filling in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. And there's a little Glenn Campbell for you. Yes, the music icon, if you will. I think icon does describe Glenn Campbell. Passed away from Alzheimer's. He's been suffering from Alzheimer's for at least 5 or 6, 7 years now. And he passed away at age 81, had a full career. And I do remember, I'm old enough to remember just barely, you know, I'm not quite that old, but I do remember being a little kid and watching the Glenn Campbell show in the late 60s and early 70s, because in the late 60s, early 70s, rural America was very prominent on network television. We had the Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction and, you know, Gunsmoke and shows like that. And then all of a sudden, the 70s came, and those were literally overnight washed away. Green Acres. Hello, Oliver. Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. And those were all highly rated shows. And then one day, CBS just canceled them all. And all of a sudden, we had more realistic shows like All in the Family and things like that. It really was a huge shift all at once. But for the late 60s, early 70s, country, the rural part of America, and country music experienced a renaissance. And so you had people like Glenn Campbell and Johnny Cash and many others. Roger Miller had King of the Road. Huge hits for a lot of country artists. Johnny Cash had a very popular show. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. And then Glenn Campbell was kind of like the squeaky clean guy. And he was like, hi, I'm Glenn Campbell. And then Gentle on My Mind was his hit, and that was kind of the theme of the show. And he had some huge hits in the late 60s with Jimmy Webb. Together they wrote some of Glenn Campbell's and some of pop music's greatest songs, including Jimmy Webb wrote them and Glenn sang them. Wichita Lineman, which, geez, is one of my all-time favorite songs. By the Time I Get to Phoenix, beautiful orchestration, beautiful lyrics and melodies. And Glenn Campbell was a huge star. In fact, he was also in the original movie of True Grit with John Wayne. And so he was a huge star. A lot of people don't know about Glenn Campbell. Is that he was an amazing musician. He was a great guitar player. He certainly had this persona. He was a nice-looking guy, but he was a great musician. He was a part of the so-called Wrecking Crew, a group of L.A. studio musicians who, incredibly, played the background, the music that you heard for over 125 number one songs. And the amount of songs in top 10 songs is outrageous. But there was this group of really pro and great studio musicians that got the nickname the Wrecking Crew. And they basically were the recording band for many of the in quotes bands, especially the 60s.
You're talking about Duck Dunn?
Duck Dunn. Yeah, Duck Dunn was more... I don't know if he was a part of the Wrecking Crew. He used to work with Steve Cropper, and he was a part of the Stax Volt and a lot of the Memphis music.
Okay.
And a lot of the blues. In fact, Duck Dunn and Steve Cropper were part of the Blues Brothers band that John Belushi and Aykroyd put together because they were so identified with the blues. But the Wrecking Crew had people like Hal Blaine, who played drums, Leon Russell, the great Leon Russell, who just passed away, who played piano. Glenn Campbell was a part of the original Wrecking Crew, so he played guitar and several other instruments and background vocals on many of the songs like The Monkees, almost everybody, the Captain and Tennille, all these quote-unquote bands used the Wrecking Crew as their recording bands because they weren't... that great musicians, but they were, you know, they either had good voices or they had a persona. And so the Wrecking Crew, there's a great documentary about the Wrecking Crew. Look it up on Netflix and you'll be amazed at how many songs this group was on. Glenn Campbell was in the Wrecking Crew. And then ironically, what few people know, Glenn Campbell for a while was a member of the Beach Boys, because Glenn Campbell played, once again, the Beach Boys were okay musicians, but they used the Wrecking Crew on all those hits as the band. So you were not hearing the Beach Boys playing their instruments. On Dick Clark and other TV and on Ed Sullivan, you saw them playing their instruments. But when they recorded that song, they wanted a top-notch band. And those guys were okay musicians, but not as great as the Wrecking Crew guys. So once, for instance, the Wrecking Crew, for the most part, played the instruments on all those great Beach Boys hits, like Fun, Fun, Fun,
Who was the only woman in the Wrecking Crew?
Oh, you know what? She played bass, and yes. I feel bad. I do not know her. Do you know her name?
Yep.
What is her name?
Carol Kay.
Yes, Carol Kay. She was a great bass player, and as you said, the only woman. And it's great when you see this documentary because
Dr. John was in the Wrecking
Dr.
Crew.
Oh, yeah. There was
I'm like, wow.
Oh, yeah. This is an unbelievable assortment of musicians. And, of course, the Wrecking Crew was also used prominently in all the Phil Spector Wall of Sound songs from the 60s, like Be My Baby, the Ronettes, and the Crystals, and Darlene Love. And but here's the thing. So Glenn Campbell was in the Wrecking Crew. If you remember, Brian Wilson broke away from the group for a while and started to just worry about writing and being in the studio, and that created Pet Sounds and some of the great Beach Boys albums of the late 60s. So he didn't tour with them. So Glenn Campbell became a Beach Boy and toured with the Beach Boys while Brian Wilson left the band as a touring act and just wrote the songs and produced the albums. And so Glenn Campbell, and no one really even knew the difference, but Glenn Campbell was a touring Beach Boy in his career. And then obviously he went on to have another renaissance after his initial popularity in the 60s. In the mid-70s, I just played Southern Nights, which is actually an Alan Toussaint song that Glenn covered. And Alan Toussaint, known for being one of the great jazz and blues and Creole New Orleans pianists. And then he had Rhinestone Cowboy, Country Boy. So he had another renaissance in the mid-70s. And then he got into a lot of problems. Then he became a gossip item because he was an older, at that time, probably in his late 30s, early 40s. And he sort of went on a substance abuse, jag with, at that time, a very young Tanya Tucker, who was a very popular and beautiful country singer at the time, and they made a lot of gossip headlines. And so then he became notorious. He was this clean-cut guy, and then suddenly he was in the gossip pages for being this kind of, and he admits this, he was a coke addict and everything, and there was scandal, and then Glenn sort of went away, and then over the last 15 or 20 years, he reemerged and sort of reestablished his legacy, and then sadly came down with Alzheimer's and did tour over the last couple of years. And it was kind of tough. I've seen some of these the shows on tape, and he had a good natured thing about it. He was many times mixed up with lyrics and would almost start the same song over again. But what was amazing was the memory, the muscle memory. He knew every lick, even though his mind would sometimes fade with the Alzheimer's on the lyrics and where he was in a song or where he even was sometimes on stage. But my gosh, when you'd hear him play that guitar, he was right in the moment. So Glenn Campbell, a tough ending to an amazing a career. And we remember him here at WGN. We'll be back right after this. I'm Elton Jim. No switching. And Elton Jim is still on the air right here at WGN. 7:20 a.m. Filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. And there's another little snippet from Glenn Campbell, who passed away from Alzheimer's at age 81. And that, of course, is the great Jimmy Webb song and the Glenn Campbell recording of Wichita Lineman. I love that orchestration, that oh, Jimmy Webb, that was probably the apex of his career. But Jimmy Webb, another amazing songwriter of his day, which a lot of people don't even know, but some of the songs he wrote, in addition to some of those that Glen Campbell made famous, as I said before, by the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be... Mick, what will she be doing by the time I get to Phoenix? Mick, you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Hey, bud.
Yeah, by the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll be rising, right, because he, because he, of course, leaves a note and leaves in the middle of the night.
Exactly. He bolts at her.
Yeah. But Jimmy Webb also wrote Fifth Dimension song, Up, Up, and Away, in My Beautiful Balloon.
Right.
He wrote MacArthur Park, which was first recorded by the actor Richard Harris, but then, of course, went on to bigger fame later in the late 70s with Donna Summer.
Yeah.
So Jimmy Webb certainly had a string of hits as well, but I would have to assume that Jimmy Webb probably looks at his time with Glen Campbell as the apex of his career. I mean,
the peak years. Yeah. Also, Jimmy Webb wrote the worst that could happen.
Oh, really?
Remember that? Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the worst that could happen.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, he was. In fact, he's still around. I think he still plays live. He's not a great singer. He's one of those songwriters like Burt Bacharach.
Right.
Who they have an amazing musical talent, but they don't really have a singing voice.
Yeah. Well, and again, he's known for the songwriting. It's like, just write the song.
Yeah. Okay? He writes the songs that make the whole world sing. Although, interestingly enough, Barry Manilow did not write I Write the Songs.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Bruce Johnston of the Beach Boys wrote that song.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm talking to Mick Kaler here, radio guy. I've known Mick ever since we went to college together back in the 80s at good old Elmhurst College, 88.7 FM. And Mick, of course, has worked in his radio career as a producer with Larry Lujack and Robert Murphy and Ramblin' Ray and John Howell. And now his work can be heard on a semi-regular basis, pretty much at least once or twice a week sometimes, Mick. Mick writes parody songs that appear regularly on the WGN Morning News.
Yeah, in fact, actually, last week we had another one. We did a tribute song to Jeff Hoover done to Ted Nugent's Cat Scratch Fever.
Yeah, I saw that. Now, if anybody doesn't know, Jeff Hoover is the producer of the WGN Morning News. So not only is Mick talented, but he's also not stupid.
That's right. you got to know where your bread is buttered.
Yeah, you know? If you want to get some, you want to make sure that something gets on the air. I mean, you know, you write a parody song about a pop tax or about Donald Trump, there's a good chance it could get on, it might not. But I almost can guarantee if you write a song about the person who determines what goes on the air, I bet you that one gets on.
You're golden.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, real quickly, I wanted to mention, Jim, about Glen Campbell and his passing. There's a story that a lot of people don't know. Glen Campbell was a catalyst for the career of Alan Jackson.
Really? The country singer?
The country singer. What happened was Alan and his wife, Denise, had moved to Nashville, and Alan was struggling. I think he was working in the mailroom at the country music show, one of the music shows down there, television shows, but he wasn't really getting anywhere. And his wife, Denise, was a flight attendant. And one day, Denise runs into Glen Campbell at the airport. And Denise introduces herself and says, "My husband Alan is, here in Nashville. He's trying to make a go of it in, country music, and he's writing songs, etc." Well, Glen Campbell facilitated Alan being hired to work for Glen Campbell's publishing house.
Jeez.
And Alan started writing songs, but the big thing was people were realizing not only can this guy write songs, unlike Burt Bacharach and Jimmy Webb, he can actually sing them too. And that's what facilitated Alan getting a record contract and then becoming the big star that he was.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been widely, said about Glen Campbell that he really was actually a nice guy.
Right.
Amidst it all. And what's funny, as I said, he went sort of on this this tear in terms of, alcohol and drugs. And then he became very religious. He became born again and became very religious.
Right, very sober.
Very sober. And as I said, he was able to at least regain a little bit of his credibility because, as I said, he went from being a very popular entertainer to then, tabloid fodder with Tanya Tucker for a while and then just sort of faded out, especially during the, you know, the 80s and 90s when, you know, that kind of music was kind of overshadowed. But certainly when country music came back, they started to look not only to the new people, but also to some of the legendary people. And I believe, didn't Glenn Campbell play in the Grammys a few years ago, too?
Yeah, he did.
I think they brought him back. They just
He sang a couple of his songs, part of them, and he had backing and all that.
Yeah.
They did that. That was kind of like his last television appearance as far as performing.
I know he recently, in fact, I believe just several months ago, put out a final album. So he was still recording, and more power to him. One of the more talented and important you know, performers of the last 50 years, Glenn Campbell. But what I wanted to talk about with Mick this morning, because you and I, we've got a beef.
Yeah.
We've got a beef, and I'm going to tell you that beef. Mick helps me out on my, I do a podcast here at WGN Plus that is posted every Monday, and I've been doing that now for the last year and a half or so. There's 64 episodes out there if you want to binge on an Elton Jim. I have officially decided that at this point I am binge-worthy. So,
well, if you binge on all those episodes, folks, it's going to come out of your ears, okay?
Every orifice.
Yeah, that too, right.
But yeah, so that, in fact, you go to WGNplus.com and go to my landing page. It's called Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. And if you're an Elton John fan, you'll get the reference. And just go there, and they're all there. Well, Mick joins me every so often, and just organically, we were talking about this upcoming, at that time, this possible tax, because there was a restraining order against it in early July. And so we just started talking about the whole thing, and I came up with this idea that I wanted to do a protest against it, and we just kind of started riffing and having fun. And ultimately, we had some fun with it, and I said, well, what I really want to do is have, instead of the Boston Tea Party, I want to have the Chicago Pop Party. And I'm going to go down the banks of Chicago River and carbonate the Chicago River. And, in fact, we were talking about, you know, since it's green at St. Patrick's Day, we can even use Green River Pop.
There you go. You're going to dump soda right in the river.
And I was talking about how I recently got into this one brand of pop from Milwaukee area called Sprecher's. And for 50 years, I've never really been a big pop drinker. And about 3 or 4 months ago, I finally got into pop. And now Cook County decides to impose this ridiculous tax. And so, you know, pop was just sitting there as cheap as could be for the first 50 years of my life. And now suddenly, you know, it's more expensive than gold.
Right. Timing's everything.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Tony Preckwinkle waited for me to get into pop.
So
then,
you strung out on the Sprecher's grape soda.
Literally.
What? We're going to do a pop tax.
4 months ago. I mean, and thankfully, I found a great selection of Sprecher's at Menards, because I didn't know Menards was a Wisconsin-based company.
Yeah.
And so they've got a huge selection of Sprecher's. So when I discovered Sprecher's, I went to Kuma's Corner one time with my wife, and I discovered Sprecher's grape soda. And I said, wow, where's this been all my life? And went and looked it up, found out that they had it at Menards. I went to Menards, and I was like a kid in a candy store. My basement stairs are lined with Sprecher's 4-packs from the floor winding up to the door. And I'm glad I bought so much back in March.
Sure.
Because that same trove that I bought would probably be another $25 more with this ridiculous tax.
You got that bunker mentality going.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing. So, you know, we talked about this, had a laugh. I said I was going to dress up as a Sprecher's bottle and then go to the banks of the river and dump, you know, pop into the river just like they did, you know, with the Boston Tea Party when they were, you know, protesting the high taxes on tea in the colonies, which started our country. At least that's what it said on Schoolhouse Rock, right?
Right, exactly.
So, you know, Mick and I came up with this idea. It was kind of funny, and we posted it. It was posted on the website. It was there for the world to see. And then, what did you tell me? So last week, when the restraining order from a judge was lifted, the tax went to effect last Wednesday. And then Mick sends me this email. What do you tell me?
I saw on Facebook my old buddy Big John Howell and Ramblin' Ray, and they were doing a video of them dumping soda into the river, doing a little soda pop party.
Oh, really?
Imagine that.
I wonder where that idea came from. I'm sorry. You know what? The Chicago radio world has not had a good war in about 10 years. Like they said, The Godfather. You know, every 10 years or so, we got to have a war.
Yeah, just to clear things out.
We should just clear things out, you know, get the blood out, get the bad blood out. Well, I'm starting a war here, whether they care or not.
Throw that gauntlet down, mister.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I went online just to make sure. July 10th is when we posted that podcast of our idea.
Yeah, almost.
On July 10th, about a month ago. And then suddenly, someone, and that's the disadvantage, unfortunately, of not being on the radio every day. You sort of can't lay claim to your ideas and do something, because to be honest with you, I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
If I was on every day. But so clearly I put it out there as a joke, and then someone reads this and goes, well, no one even knows who Elton Jim is, and no one even knows he has a podcast, so let's just steal his idea.
We'll just shoplift it.
Yeah.
Right there.
So, and I actually sort of know Ramblin' Ray, because in a previous life, we were on the same station at CKG, and he was at US 99, and he used to come down and join us every so often when we did the show there in 2007. And so I sort of know Ramblin'. So Ramble, R squared, what are you doing, man? At least say, hey, we're going to do this, but, you know, a little attribution.
A little homage to you, please.
Yeah.
Something for the effort.
Okay. So, anyway, I'm just letting you know. If you thought that was a funny idea, so did I when I came up with it. We'll be back right after this. No switching.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising.
By the time I finish this show at 5 a.m., I'm sure a lot of people will be rising too. But hopefully you have already risen for whatever reason. Third shifter, insomniac, newborn baby screaming, whatever it is. We're glad you are joining us here at WGN Radio, 7:20 a.m. I'm Jim Tirano, or Elton Jim, as I've been known to be called, filling in for Nick DiGilio tonight and tomorrow. So hopefully you will be rising by the time I finish this radio show. She'll be rising. How about that, Mick?
Yeah, beautiful.
Nice. Who needs Glenn Campbell?
Or Jimmy Webb, doesn't matter.
Right here. So, welcome. I like this. I got a Facebook posting the other day. I said, you know, I know it's early if you want to listen to me, but I'll be on in the wee hours, and a good old loyal listener, Eric the Undertaker, said, at 3 a.m. is the wee hours for me.
I was going to say that some men have to get up in the middle of the night.
Yes. And, so welcome to the wee hours show.
Take care of business. That'd be a good name for it.
I like that. The wee hours show. I really like that. I'm using it. I told Eric, I said, I'm sorry. I love that line. I'm using it. I will
give him credit.
And listen, and once again, a key in my, I hate hypocrites, and I try my, we're all hypocrites at one point or another. I try my best to not be a hypocrite as much as it's possible to be. And so once again, I was just railing against some fellow radio brethren who, in quotes, borrowed my idea, our idea, for a something called the Chicago Pop Party, as opposed to the Boston Tea Party, to protest the Cook County pop tax. And I was just complaining that another radio show here in Chicago sort of lifted that idea without any attribution. But once again, just to show, I'm not a hypocrite. I didn't just steal the wee hours idea.
You gave if you're doing a term paper, you gave full quotation. And
yes. Right now, Eric the actor, you could tell I listen to Howard Stern. Eric the Undertaker he's in the bibliography.
Right. He's got
and
a footnote.
And he's in the footnotes.
There you go.
If he goes in the back, page 47, Eric the Undertaker, wee hours. I think he might even be cross-referenced with Eric the Undertaker under the E's and under the W's for wee hours.
Now, right. Is it Undertaker the, comma, Eric, or is it Eric, comma?
Oh, wow, see?
We're not going to get technical, just as long as he gets the credit.
That's why the Sugar Man is here. because he brings up the little details. You know what? That's a good point. Let's see. Where did I think I may have put him under E for Eric? Okay. Although I could have put him for Undertaker. The I like that. That's Dan Chagrou jumping in with a fine little observation. So anyway, yes, we were talking about the pop tax here. And the one thing I did want to say, I mean, I was kind of joking around to some extent, although, you know, as I said, you know, we came up with this the Chicago pop tax idea just kind of like a riff, and just wouldn't it be funny, ha, ha, ha. And then, you know, like I said, someone actually did it and ripped it off without any attribution. But in all honesty, this is really a horrible tax in that I understand that government agencies need to tax. I understand that. But this was rolled out in a wrong way from a communication standpoint. It was devised as a pure money grab, and it was presented as it was it was going to try to be a health type of thing. We're going to save people from obesity by having such a high tax on pop that they'll stop drinking it. Yeah, that's worked with cocaine and heroin, hasn't it? I mean, what are you talking about? You know what? I got news for you. You know, prohibition didn't work. There's only so much a government can do about human behavior. I understand laws and murder and things like that. But there's also a certain area that government can't, you know, work on. And once again, has everybody in the country stopped smoking? The taxes on cigarettes are ridiculous. A pack of cigarettes is what, $8, $9, $10? And you know what?
Yeah, where you are, yeah.
And you know what? Some people still smoke.
Sure.
That's why we live in America. But what really irks me about this pop tax is not only was it a pure money grab, folded up and presented as some kind of a health thing, but what really is about it is and I understand taxing, but here's the thing. If this would have been a tax that they said, we're going to tax pop, but because of that, our schools are going to get 10,000 more computers, and there's going to be some new training for people to get jobs, and there's going to be some more services for the elderly in Cook County. If this tax was going to be responsible for a slew of new programs that were going to provide some new services to the people, then I would say, hey, you know what? What are you going to do?
Yeah, it got some positive results, right?
No new services are being created with this tax. This tax is to fill in a huge gap in overspending and poor management and cronyism that defines the Cook County government. So
right. It's basically robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, so not only are we getting taxed with the yin-yang, but it's just to pay bills.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it's a regressive tax, and it's going to be hurting the people who perhaps need the most help. Because a lot of, you know, and this is just a true statement, a lot of the people that drink soft drinks, sweetened drinks, many times are low-income people. So the people you supposedly wanted to help are the ones you're going to be hurting with this tax. And it's just wrong in every way. And I hope, you know, it's in effect right now, and that's fine. But I hope that when people start to really feel the impact of this, because 12 or 16 cents added to every can or bottle of pop that you buy, whether and especially if it's in a 12-pack or a 24-pack, that's adding some real money.
By the way, just so you know, this also has to do with the pops you buy at fast food places.
Yeah. In fact, Walgreens and McDonald's are now being sued because they have incorrectly been taxing people. They've been taxing. I think McDonald's has been taxing on the subtotal. So basically, they've been taxing on top of a tax.
Right.
So now they're being sued. I mean, this just was just handled. Another example of how poorly government runs. And I'll tell you, Tony Preckwinkle, if I ran against you, I would my first press conference to announce my election, I would be sitting at a podium with Coke, Pepsi, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper bottles right in front of me and just say, questions?
Actually, you could dress up in your soda pop outfit.
Yes.
And you could be at the press conference.
And you watch. Now someone's going to steal that idea.
No, you know what? The candidate could actually dress up in your costume.
Right.
And then show up, and everyone's like, what's this soda pop bottle doing here? And then they pull off the hat or whatever and say, hey, I'm the candidate. I'm running against Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah, there you go. And you want to laugh? You watch. In a couple of years, that's going to happen.
Sure.
No switching. I think Soda Pop is going to be not getting to the top. I think it's going to be the ruin for Tony Preckwinkle, if you ask me. The Pop Tax, week one. I feel like Ted Koppel here, Mick.
Yeah, it's like the hostage crisis.
Day seven, Chicago, Cook County, taken hostage for Pop. Day seven. And today, the Pop Tax turned 7 days old. I'm Ted Koppel. I have to say this, too, about Tony Preckwinkle. And the funny thing is, Tony Preckwinkle was never really on my radar screen, and now suddenly
she's all over it.
She's a reason why I take three, count them, high blood pressure medications. not only is this, as I said before, a regressive tax, a money grab that was kind of trying to be sold as a health benefit for people. It's a regressive tax. It's there simply to cover up years of overspending. And I saw that Tony Preckwinkle said people have to understand that if they want good government, they have to pay for it. Yeah, the key there is good government. We're not getting good government.
Start providing some good government.
Yeah, you provide me some good government, I will pay the tax. I don't have any kids, and I pay taxes for my property taxes for public schools. I have never stepped into one of the public schools in my area, and I pay for that. I pay for a heck of a lot of taxes for services that I get no use for. But I'm willing to do it and happy to do it because we're all in this together. But don't make me pay for something just because you're not good at your job. And here's the thing. What people are forgetting here, too, Tony Preckwinkle ran against Todd Strozier for the Cook County Board. Now, granted, Todd Strozier was way over his skis. He did not belong in being the president of the Cook County Board. It was nepotism. It was his father. It was cronyism. I understand that. Todd seemed like a nice guy, but I just think he was over his skis in that job.
Right.
But if you remember, one of the controversial things of Todd Strozier's tenure as the head of the Cook County Board was that he raised the sales tax to 10%. That ruffled a lot of people's feathers, and Tony Preckwinkle ran against Todd Strozier on one of her main planks was this high tax that
right.
Strozier was
she,
getting
she
hit.
She exploited that.
Yeah, she exploited that, used it as a main thing to run against Todd Strozier. Then when she got into the job and saw how poorly run and how horrible, what fiscal, terrible, you know, terrible fiscal and economic and financial state that the board was in, she brought the tax back up to 10%.
Yep, and now she's got the soda tax.
The same thing she ran against, and now she starts this tax. So I'm sorry, Tony, but that's not cutting it. You know, that's, once again, that's hypocrisy. There's got to be other ways. How come for many years, suddenly, then the best part was, when this was under a restraining order, this pop tax, because the retailers group was suing to not implement this, so this tax was not enacted for almost a month, then right away she announces layoffs.
Yeah.
We cannot, if we can't get the pop tax, we have to start laying people off. So in other words, the only way that people, that our Cook County government can run, apparently, is with a pop tax.
Well, here's
without
the,
a pop tax, we have to shut the government down and start laying people off. That's BS.
Well, here's my next question. Are those people being rehired? The ones that were fired because
they were never fired. It was all this. It was all of a sudden. It was another ploy to get people on board with this. Well, people are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
So right away, if we don't tax pop, we have to shut things down. Somebody in her office came up with this idea because, hey, I got news for you. From her standpoint, it's a great idea. A penny an ounce, like I said, 12 ounces or 16 ounces. What's the tax on 2 liters?
And then the next question is, and I don't want to scare you too much there, pal, what happens if someday she decides to raise that tax on the soda?
Well, I mean, I'm no metric I'm no metric expert here. I don't know how many ounces are in 2 liters, but I think the days are gone of a dollar of a grocery store selling a 2 liter bottle for a buck. It's impossible.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Not in Cook County.
And what's going to happen? I just thought about this too. What about at the pop machines? Pop at the pop machines are already way overpriced. Sometimes they're $2 a can.
Yeah.
And now you're going to pay another 14 or 12 cents? I'm just hoping that when people start to feel this after the next month or so or 2 months or 6 months, that people start to really give her a hard time. And this is either altered or repealed or cut back in some way, because this is just arrogance of a government arrogance. And you know, we do need to just stop laying down our arms. You know, throughout the whole presidential campaign, there was so much emphasis on what the deficit was. You know, $2 or $3 trillion deficit. That's all they were talking about. And you know, from my standpoint, if our country had a $2 or $3 trillion deficit, and yet our schools were amazing, our highways and bridges and airports were amazing, Our care for the poor, our care for the elderly was amazing, our health care was top-notch. If all that stuff was working great, and yet it cost $2 trillion above board to make that happen, I think people would accept that if the overruns were giving us something positive. But my problem was, we've got $2 or $3 trillion in debt, and we have the same problems that we had 50 years ago.
Exactly.
Schools are bad. Our infrastructure is falling apart. We're helping the poor, poverty. We have made absolutely zero, improvement on these major issues, and we still spent $3 trillion.
Well, it's basically like going to an expensive restaurant and paying a lot of money for food that doesn't taste good.
Yeah. So sorry, Tony, but that's not cutting it. And you know, the funny thing is, about 2 or 3 years ago, Tony Preckwinkle's name was being floated as mayor.
Yeah,
to run against. It's not going to happen now.
She even had to make announcements saying, "I'm not running." Yeah, and all that.
I read that there's one of the new commissioners. His name is Richard Boykin, and he's thinking of running. Richard, let me tell you, like I told you, if you want to announce your candidacy, just make sure you are surrounded by cases of pop.
And Jim will dress up in his soda pop out.
After the break, I'm going to talk to you about how I beat the pop tax. And then Mick's going to tell a story about, because I actually had to venture across state lines.
you're doing it. Well, we'll get into it. But I'll tell you what you remind me of when you're doing this, too.
And then Mick has a story about how you used to travel for something really cool, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all that and more. I'm Elton Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGilio here at WGN. It's about 17 minutes after 3. We're here until 5. I'm staying until 5. I hope you will, too. So up until then, no switching. Like a rhinestone cowboy. Actually, the lights are shining on me pretty brightly in this studio. You know, the beautiful Allstate Showcase studio here at WGN used to have really nice, you know, kind of warm lighting. And I think they've installed some of these LED things in order to make it better for some TV that they do in here now. And oof, Patty Vasquez actually brings in lamps. There's two lamps. I walked in here. I thought I was in a bordello.
Right.
From like New Orleans in the 1950s. It was all dark in here except for two lamps. But yes, I was playing Grindstone Cowboy for the passing of Glenn Campbell. So Mick and I were talking about this pop tax, and we should also say that not only, you know, we started this off as kind of a joke, the Chicago pop tax thing that someone then started to rip off here over the last week, but we invented it on July 10th, more than a month before anyone did it, as I think is important to state. But we also came up, if you're gonna have a protest, you need a name for your group.
Sure, representation.
Yeah, so we came up with SODA, Stop Our Drinking Assault. SODA. SODA.
It works.
Well, we'll see, hopefully. I swear to God, if I ever see Tony Preckwinkle walking down the street, from now on I'm just going to carry a can of pop with me, and I'm going to shake it.
No, better yet, offer it to her, and then charge her for it, big money.
Yeah, right, yeah. There you go. Hey, Tony. Boy, it's 90 degrees out. Couldn't you go for a little little thirst-quenching can of pop? Here you go. $2, please. In fact, John is on the line here. Is it John? Are you there, yeah. John?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Yeah, so you are a metric expert. How many ounces in a 2 liter?
I think 67.6.
Whoa! 67 ounces?
Yeah, but you're not paying attention to the ads that the Pop Council has been putting out. They say in there that the 99-cent 2 liter bottle of pop, you're going to go walk out of the store by the time you pay all the high Illinois taxes, including the pop tax. That 99-cent bottle, 2 liter bottle, is going to cost you $1.82.
It's almost twice.
So that's an 83% tax on that 2 liter bottle of pop, Crackwinkle. Not a penny an ounce. Yeah, but add it all up.
Yeah, you forget about the other 10%. Yeah, I mean, folks, are we just going to, I mean, I'm not trying to make, you know, to sound like Chicken Little here, but that's a huge tax. Wow. Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that. I didn't really realize that, but that's $1.82. Oh, man. So here's what I did, Mick, real quick.
Okay.
I went to, I told you, I fell in love with Sprecher's Grape Soda.
Yeah,
which has started
to go make a little sojourn.
Yeah, started my whole pop jag here about 4 months ago. So how did I beat the pop tax? I went to Greendale, Wisconsin, and went to the Sprecher's Brewery to buy my pop.
Now, how far away is that from here?
About 90 miles.
Okay,
it's just out. It's like 10 minutes out of Milwaukee.
Oh, okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, so it was about 90 miles, about an hour and a half to get there. I took a tour of the brewing company. And then afterward,
is it a brewery or is it just a plant? Because I mean,
no, it's a brewery because Sprecher's makes pop, but they started as a brewery, and then out of just the heck of it, they started making root beer.
Okay.
And then it turns out that root beer, the Sprecher's root beer, is now outselling their beer 3-1. It's the root beer that keeps the lights on at Sprecher's.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And they have tours of the facility.
Yeah. So you go through, and it's a nice little tour, about a half hour. But the best part is, they give you some drink tickets, and they have an indoor beer garden when you're done with the tour. They show how they do the bottling and all the malt and blah, blah, blah. And then they give you a little thing for 4 different tastings. You can get any beer.
Wow.
Uh-oh. Where's that at? Oh, that's my thing, I think. No, where was that coming from? Anyway. They give you four tags to get some samples. Like, you know, when you go for a wine tasting or any kind of thing, they usually give
you just a little samplers.
They give you a full glass. You can get beer or pop. You can walk out of there drunk. This one guy came up to me and said, "You know, I'm not going to use my 4. Do you want these?" And I said, "I have to drive back to Chicago. I can't drink anymore. I'm going to get a DUI because I went to Sprecher's." So pretty cool to go up there. But I went to the source to not only pay homage to Sprecher's, but also to beat the pop tax. But also, I have to just say, I'm not going to say where you live, Mick.
Right.
But Mick does not live in Cook County, so I may need you to be my soda pop mule.
That's right. I'm going to be your source.
You're going to be. I think we'll meet at a McDonald's on the county line, and then you just open your trunk, and I'll open mine, and we'll make the switch.
Back alley, like in Godfather 2, and they're talking about smuggling molasses out of Canada.
Oh, me and your father made meal. Your father too, Hyman Roth. Trucks owned by your father, Michael. We made a fortune, your father too. But yeah, this is what it's come down to. We have to like smuggle pop in. Where are we at in 2017 here?
Okay, now here's my big question. So you go up there with Jamie, you go up and you check out the Sprecher's and you buy the soda. What size truck did you bring with you? What size rider truck did you rent?
I just put the seats down in the HRV.
Okay,
that's all I did.
So how much did you buy?
I actually didn't buy. I didn't buy that much because I told you I still have all this pop on my basement stairs.
Oh, okay. So you actually didn't go up there just to buy soda?
No, I just sort of went there because I wanted to see Sprecher's. But I did invent. But I did find a cool thing. It's called Duck Malt, and it's grape beer They use Concord grapes in a beer. So I bought some of that. And then I brought some hard apple pie soda. Oh.
You were just going to be like a sugar junkie.
The funny thing is, I'm not eating it. I'm not drinking any of it. But I just want to have it in case I want it. I hope does pop go bad?
Right. No, I don't think so. I really don't think it does.
I hope it doesn't. So, anyway, well, Mick, as usual, I had so much more to talk to you about, and we never get to it.
Never do. We jammed a little too long on some songs.
Yeah, but you might actually be joining us tomorrow, so maybe we can get into part two of this tomorrow as well.
You bet, pal.
All right, so thank you. But once again, you know Ramblin' Ray and John Howell. I want you to get in contact with them and tell them that I am throwing down the gauntlet. I am officially in a radio war, even though I have no radio show.
Duly noted.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mick.
Later, man.
Mick Kaler, you can hear his and see his work on the WGN Morning News. He writes parody songs that are often featured on the WGN Morning News. Mick Kaler, good friend of mine from a long time back. It's always great to do some radio with him. On the other side of the news, after this break, we will be talking about some of Chicago's best and favorite sports songs. And I will take a look at the list that was in the Chicago Tribune, and then, of course, disagree wholeheartedly with it and then give you my list. But right now, we'll take a quick break. No switching.
Galveston, oh Galveston, I still hear your sea winds blowing.
Jim Toronto with you here at WGN this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here till 5 o'clock. Be here tomorrow morning as well from 2 to 5. So I look forward to speaking with you. Hopefully regular listeners here. What I like about the filling in and doing this shift is that it might not be a big audience, but it's a nice loyal audience. I know there's a lot of people that are up at this time for whatever reason. And if we can help make your... whether you're at work or you're coming home from work or you're, you know, up, as I said, maybe just because you have insomnia, or maybe your newborn wakes you up at 3 a.m, we're here for you. Now, a lot of people say, Jim, how could you like filling in, or how could you like working at 2 a.m? It's crazy. The fact is, I have really some really bad sleep patterns and insomnia at times. I recently actually did a sleep study. I do not have sleep apnea. But I did do a sleep study where I actually went to this facility and was wired up on my head and my shoulders and my legs, because, you know, your legs kick as well. And they monitor, and there's a TV. It's like a hotel room. And you sleep overnight. You get there at like 10 o'clock, and they wire you up, and you fall asleep, and you wake up like at 5 in the morning, and then they let you know if you have any... abnormalities, or in my case, they were testing for sleep apnea. It just turns out I have a loud snore. That's all it is. It's just a loud snore. I guess I have a deviated septum, and so apparently that every so often I have a loud snore. So nothing health-wise wrong, just audio. But that's surprising. And Elton Jim, even when he's sleeping, making noise. I just can't shut up one way or the other. I'm either talking or snoring. 24 hours of constant noise coming out of this body here. But we were talking about the death of Glenn Campbell earlier in the show. He died at age 81 from complications of Alzheimer's disease. I just want to also mention a Chicagoan prominence who also passed away, who might get lost in that shuffle, political cartoonist Dick Locher. Over the Chicago Tribune, was a Pulitzer Prize-winning political cartoonist. I love political cartoons. I always have. I really like politics. And so as a young kid, I always would read the political cartoon section. I certainly enjoy the work of Scott Stantis here at the Chicago Tribune and have come to know Scott, and so it's pretty cool. But Dick Locher was a Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist for the Tribune, and early in his career worked on Dick Tracy comic strip. So how cool is that? Dick Locher, a local, lived in Naperville, I believe, and he passed away. So we've lost another very cool and contributor to our pop culture world, Dick Locher passing away, as I said, also Glenn Campbell. So I was reading the Tribune on Sunday, And I saw in the Tribune sports section, they had a cool story called Playing Up Tempo. And basically it was about all the some of the great sports songs in Chicago history to support our great sports teams. We are, Chicago certainly is identified as one of the better sports cities in the country. As I said, right now we're getting into an area where we're going to all the major sports are going to be happening all at the same time. Obviously, baseball in full swing. Football has already begun spring training. And I believe the Bears play Thursday in their first preseason game. And, of course, there was news now that Cutler is going to be the new quarterback for the Dolphins. And if we have time at the end of the show, I'll have my little take on that. But, wow, that's talking about it. You couldn't make that up. And the Blackhawks will be starting spring training soon and training camp as well as them, and also the Bulls as the fall sports begin. And I should also, too, we talk about the Blackhawks, we're talking about sports here, our best wishes and our best hopes to Blackhawk color announcer Eddie Olchek, who apparently announced just yesterday, I believe, that he has colon cancer. And I guess a tumor was taken out of his colon, and he will have to go through a regimen of chemo and other types of treatments for this cancer. So hopefully Eddie will beat this. He is really one of the best sports announcers, and also has a ball every year at the Kentucky Derby for NBC, contributing to that because he's a great fan of horse racing. And he's a good guy. I came to know him to some extent when we would do remotes during the afternoon, and they'd come on and he would come on the show, and I've had him on a few times now since when I would fill in. So we're thinking of you there, good old Edzo, if you will. But yeah, what a sad thing. In fact, I just recently, I'm talking about all my medical maladies, I just had a colonoscopy just purely because I'm at the age where you should, and thankfully everything came out clean. But thankfully Eddie must have had a colonoscopy at some point and have caught this. And so hopefully it was caught early. And I'm sure that those of you who cancer has touched know that any kind of cancer treatment with chemo is not easy. But if anybody can get through it, a hockey player can get through it, right? A tough guy like Eddie Olchek. So our thoughts are with you, good old Eddie Olchek. But let's get to this. So the Tribune had this list of the best Chicago songs. So here was their list. And I should say, as you shouldn't be surprised, of course, I read the list and I immediately disagreed wholeheartedly with it, as you would expect an Elton Jim to do. That's why you listen. I mean, if I agreed with it, who cares? If I were you, I'd fall asleep at 3:45 if I agreed with the list. What the heck is that? We need a little edge here, a little controversy. So, of course, I disagreed with it. And I should say, too, people say, I said, I was talking before, you know, would you know, do you mind, you know, working at that time at 2 a.m. I have insomnia too. I talk about my sleep apnea thing. I have really bad sleep patterns. So right now, if I was home, I would be watching on the Buzzer channel, the Match Game Marathon from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Match Game is on. So from usually I wake up about 1:30. So I usually watch Match Game till about 3. I'm not a huge fan of Family Feud. So that starts at 3. So I usually watch Match Game from like 1 to 3. So I'd be at the start of this show at 2:00. I'd be up anyway, folks. I'd be watching Match Game. I'd much rather be here. So that answers that. So here's the list that the Tribune had for the best songs in Chicago sports. Number one, they mentioned the Alan Parsons Project song, Sirius, which they play when they announce. And now, number 23, North Carolina, Michael Jordan. And then, of course, Chelsea Daggers, number 2, which they play by the Fratellis every time the Blackhawks score a goal. Na-na-na-na-na-hey-hey, which was made popular in the 70s thanks to Nancy Faust playing that for the White Sox when they would knock out a pitcher. She would play that. It became very popular. Bear Down, Chicago Bears, number 4. Ba-ba-ba-da-da-da. The current Cub victory song, number 5, Go Cubs Go by Steve Goodman. Number 6, the Star Spangled Banner, as sung by Jim Cornelison at the Blackhawks. You got to love when he goes, and the flag was still there, and he points to the flag. Oh, nice touch, Jim. The Super Bowl Shuffle, very 80s, if you will. I'm Mama's Boy Otis. Yeah, the Super Bowl Shuffle. Then there was Be Like Mike. I want to be like Mike. That was a Nike card, commercial, I thought. That was number 8. Then, of course, the classic that used to start off every Channel 9 broadcast of a Cub game. Hey, hey, holy mackerel. That was number 9. And number 10 was, hey, let me hear you. Oh, one, a two, take me out to the ball game. Hey, Harry, when he would sing, take me out to the ball game. Oh, boy. Well, of course, I disagree with that list wholeheartedly. Because, especially, ironically, my number one isn't even on that list. Not even on that list. So let's take a little rundown. I won't play them all, but I will play a few of them. For instance, my number 10 is Go Cubs Go. My number 9 is the Super Bowl Shuffle. My number 8 is the Bulls. Oh, no, I'm sorry. My number 8 is the Star-Spangled Banner, because Jim Cornelison, and I should mention Wayne Messmer, started that tradition at the old Chicago Stadium, and he would hit that, and the Hanover Brief at the end. So you got to give that to Wayne. Don't forget Wayne either. Let's see. Number 7 then would be the Bulls, the Alan Parsons series. Number 6 would be take me out to the ball game. Hey! Number 5, yeah, you know, even though the Bears are a horrible team, they still have that great song. Number 4, you got to love the Chelsea Dagger when the Blackhawks score. So let's take a look at my top 3. That coming in at number 3, yeah, it is the same as the one here on the list. You got to love Steam doing na 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 hey 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 every time a pitcher got knocked out. Nancy Faust would play that. And hey hey goodbye. That was really cool. It started organically and it was really cool. And actually, I just read recently the lead singer of Steam passed away. So there's a little symmetry for you as well. But that's my number 3, Steam's na 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 hey hey goodbye. And then number 2, as I said, a great way, if you grew up in the 70s, you watched the Cubs on Channel 9, and every broadcast, this is how you knew the Cubs were on.
Hey, hey, it's Jack Brickhouse!
With Jimmy West and Lou Boudreau and, of course, Harry. Although the Cubs used to use Jump then, later in the 80s, by Van Halen. But yeah, this in the 70s. In the times of Carmen Fanzone and Pete LeCocq and all those horrible Cubs, this is what used to kick off Leadoff Man with Jim West. And so my number one was not even, it was an honorable mention. This is the best sports song in Chicago, bar none. Sorry, folks. Hit it there, Danny. Oh! The Dick Marx Orchestra. That's Richard Marx's father, actually, the singer. But this is the best sports song. Listen to that. Oh, I love that song. They still play it sometimes at the Hawks game, you know, between warm-ups. Obviously, they play a lot louder music, but this is the classic. Oh, love it. Number one, Here Come the Hawks by the Dick Marx Orchestra. So those are the top 10 songs in my mind. And after the break, we're going to talk to someone who has recently written a new Cub song who hopes that that song may someday break into this list. We shall see. Let's win it together. Chicago Cub family. Ride the Derby, ride the Derby, ride the Derby. Cubs Club. Ride the Derby, ride the Derby, ride the Derby. Cubs Club. Sandro DeRoche, Banks, and Harry. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN. Filling in for Nick DiGilio. So I gave you a list of some of the best Chicago sports songs. I gave you my list. Topping my list was the Chicago Blackhawks' Here Come the Hawks, the classic Dick Marx song from the 60s. Just, I think, one of the best sports songs. Obviously, over the last couple of years, with the popularity now of the Cubs and now of their World Series last year, a lot of people have been writing Cubs songs. In fact, Go Cubs Go was written by Steve Goodman and almost discarded in the 80s after a couple of years. And then found this renaissance a few years ago when the Cubs started to play well. It was played after all the games, and now it's their official victory theme song. But I'm talking on the phone here from New York with Ken Franklin, who hopes his song, the one you just heard, may replace Go Cubs Go. Good morning, Ken. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Elton, Jim. Hey, I had to stay wide awake, so I pulled out a five-year-old Carnegie Deli corned beef sandwich.
Oh.
I took a few bites out of that.
Don't even tell. I love the Carnegie Deli.
I know.
And I love their corned beef. I actually went there last year in December, right before they closed, to get my last corned beef at Ground Zero over there on 57th and 7th. Oh,
that's right. I actually spent time with the great late Henny Youngman over there. He was my neighbor on 55th Street.
Oh, take my wife, please.
That's right, yeah. He was on the 7th floor. I was an 18K, and an 18B was my neighbor, believe it or not, Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones.
What a great Richards. Why, he have any corned beef?
That's it.
Hello, mate. Was a effing corned beef?
A trivia question: do you know what famous person, politician, actually graduated Maine East High School in Park Ridge, Illinois, with Steve Goodman?
Wow! Not no. What? Who's that?
Hillary Clinton.
Really?
They graduated in 1965. They were classmates.
I did not know that. That is that's weird trivia.
Cool.
Ken, thank you.
Like that.
Thank you for that, Ken.
So Ken is here to talk about a song he wrote. So tell me the genesis of the song, and I'm very impressed by your co-writers. So talk about it a little here.
Well, I have been a Mets fan over the years, but I always had a love for most things Chicago. My sister-in-law is from Skokie, and I've been to Chicago several times, of course, and I've been a part-time Blackhawks fan. Obviously, when the Cubs were on their way deep into the playoffs in 2016, it just revved up my interest even more, and I was just very inspired to write a song. I mean, I always loved Steve Goodman's Go Cubs Go, but I felt that there should be a new modern twist on Go Cubs Go. I've heard other people doing Cubs songs over the years, but I just had it in me to create something that I thought would be pretty special. So I spoke with Liz Chidester. You might not know her, but she's a Chicago singer-songwriter. And we put down the lyrics, and I realized we needed to bring in something more. So be it that I'm a music license agent, I'm very well connected with lots of well-known singer-songwriters, people that have won Grammy and even Academy Awards. And so I brought in Chicagoan Carl Giamarese of
the Buckinghams.
The Buckinghams, exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of a Drag, which was the number one hit.
Oh, my gosh, and they had a million of them. Kind of a Drag.
So Carl added...
Playing our song?
What's that?
They're playing our song.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, baby, they're playing our song.
Oh, that's right, exactly. Yeah, a Buckingham song.
Dennis DeFano.
So Carl sang the lead vocals, and I brought in Joe Vitale. And you might not know Joe by his name, but you definitely know his music. Joe co-wrote with Joe Walsh, Rocky Mountain Way.
You know, Joe Vitale, when Joe Walsh used to do radio in the 80s,
right.
He used to help him. He would be Joe the bass player. And he was he was his sidekick when Joe would go around the country and fill in and do radio with people. And Joe Vitale used to be his sidekick, Joe the bass player.
Well, if you read Joe Vitale's book, Backstage Pass, which is all about his days on the road with Joe Walsh and the Eagles and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, there is a photograph. There are many photos, but there's one photo of Joe Walsh and Joe Vitale doing a radio promotion, I think, for The Loop.
Yeah.
In the 80s or so. So, yeah, he has a real big connection.
Yeah, he was Joe the bass player. You know, Ken, we're running a little time. Can you stay over another 10 or 15 minutes?
Oh, yeah, I could stay on longer.
We'll take a quick break, and we're going to do the news, and then after the news, because I don't want to just rush you off here. I want to play a song, and I want to dig a little more into this, and we've got the time here. So Ken Franklin is going to talk after the news about his song, and we will continue on that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with the news, and no switching.
Let's sing.
Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Boy, this show has flown by. Jeez, less than an hour to go. So that was Chicago Cub Family that we bumped in there with, that song there. And one of the people responsible for that is on my phone calling from New York. It's, 5:07 there, right?
It is indeed, yes.
Yeah, that's Ken Franklin and the mastermind behind Chicago Cub Family. Now, explain once again, what I find kind of neat and unique about this story is that you are, and as I said, you're calling from New York, you're a lifelong Met fan, and as we all know, Chicago Cub fans hate the Mets because of 1969.
Right, that's right.
So there's already an interesting, kind of conflict here. I mean, you should not be a Cub fan at all, and Cub fans should naturally hate you. Because you beat, not only did you beat us in 1969, but the amazing Mets went on to win the World Series that year.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, I brought good luck to the Hawks, because when they last won the Cup, I was listening to all their games on the Internet, and lo and behold, they won the Cup again in, 2015.
So that was you that did that?
That was me.
Ah, very good. I thought maybe it was Corey Crawford and Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, but I guess it was Ken Franklin.
It was me and Bobby Hull. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And Bobby Hull there.
Yeah. So I'm just have this passion for the Cubs. And
yeah. So you are a Mets fan, but then yeah. So did you get? Have you always been a Cub fan, or did you just going to get swept up in the whole Cub story of last year?
We always did love the Cubs as my second team, but then when the Mets got knocked out, I had no other choice. So I always had a connection with the Cubs in some way, shape, or form. But I do feel that the Chicago Cubs should be a three-song team. You have Go Cubs Go, which was, number five on that best top 10 list. And you had Harry Carey's Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Hey, let me hear you. Oh, boy.
And there should be our song, Chicago Cub Family, is the third song. And it could be played even, Jim, it could be played after a Cubs loss. Who says that there can't be a song after a loss?
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
But yet the Cubs received our media release, our publicist, Beth Fine, sent the press release out to 200 in-office employees of the Chicago Cubs last week, and you know how much response we got from the Cubs? Zero. Zero response to our, what we think is a pretty darn catchy song. And the fact is that every year the Cubs invite our co-writer Carl of the Buckinghams to sing the national anthem.
Right, so we should give if people hadn't joined in before the news. So Ken came up with this idea. He wrote the lyrics to this song, which is called The Chicago Cubs Family, correct?
Chicago Cubs Family, yes.
And then he wanted some really top-notch musicians to help him out. So who did you employ again to help you out?
Jim Morisi, the lifelong Chicagoan and founding member of the Buckinghams. By the way, the Buckinghams' first album, which featured Kind of a Drag, was recorded at the Chess Record Studio right there in Chicago.
Oh, yes, on 22nd and or on Michigan Avenue, definitely.
And then I brought in the great Joe Vitale of Crosby, Stills, and Nash and the Eagles and Joe Walsh fame and John Lennon even. He had an album with John Lennon. So I thought by adding those two, that would add something more to the song. And we really feel we have something pretty hot. As you know, Jim, the Chicago Tribune did a nice piece on us last Friday. But yet, the Chicago Cubs are saying no go.
Okay, well, here's the thing. You should have a little, there is some reason for you to have a little faith and maybe a little patience, because here's the irony of the situation. You mentioned Go Cubs Go, which has now become the official victory song at Wrigley.
Right.
But I'm not sure if you know the history of this. Go Cubs Go, as you said, was written by Steve Goodman. It was actually commissioned by either the Cubs or by this radio station or this company, because WGN used to broadcast the games on radio, and WGN-TV still is the flagship station for the Cubs television.
Right, and it's part of the lyric.
Oh, yeah, they're actually right. Yeah, right, exactly. But here's the thing. That song, when it came out in the 80s, was, if you got to remember the 80s music of the day, was very, you know, kind of big and poppy. And, you know, synthesizers and everything. And so when Go Cubs Go was originally introduced and used for the broadcasts, it was only used for a couple of years. It was very unpopular, and it was shelved almost immediately. And so that song has not been used for the Cubs for the last 35 years. It's been only used for the Cubs, I would say, in the last four or five, maybe a few years longer than that. But certainly... not since it was written. So that song sort of made a comeback over the last several years when the Cubs started to win. So what I'm saying is, I can understand you're kind of upset because maybe the Cubs haven't immediately responded to you, but it's almost taken Steve Goodman's song 30 years to be appreciated. So there may be some chance for you. So don't give up hope yet.
Another 30 years when the Carnegie Deli reopened.
I know. But, you know, the funny thing is, I don't know if you know the genesis of the Steve Goodman song, but he also wrote a song called A Dying Cub Fan's Last Request.
I know. I read all that on
Wikipedia. Yeah, and that was around, and it was kind of and it was more about how bad the Cubs were.
Right.
And so then they came to Steve Goodman, a lifelong Chicagoan, and said, hey, can you write an upbeat Chicago song? And then he sort of wrote a song that is very out of character for him, because that's, you know, Go Cubs Go is a very poppy kind of song.
Right.
Certainly not a folk song, but and he's a huge Cub fan. But as I said, you know, sadly, he died of cancer at a young age, back in the late 80s. And he's never seen what his song ultimately became. He only saw how it was kind of rejected and put away. So sadly, he never lived long enough to see how it's now become the victory anthem.
And a year after he died, his song "City of New Orleans" won a Grammy Award.
Yeah. So sadly, I mean, he was a very respected and well known folk artist in folk circles with both audiences and performers. Never made it huge in terms of mainstream popularity until, unfortunately, after his death. Now, hopefully that won't happen to you.
Yeah, I was going to say that I could, like, maybe choke on a Carnegie Deli sandwich. I'll die. I'll get some good press. The song of Hours becomes a hit.
So how long did this whole song take to come together?
Right after the Cubs won the World Series is when Liz Tridesta, the Chicago singer-songwriter, she and I wrote the lyric. And then she wrote down most of the music. That was, beginning of November, right, when the Cubs won the World Series?
Right. I think it was November 2nd, I think.
November that we wrote the music and the lyric. And then it was December that I called on Carl and I said, hey, Carl, what do you think of this demo? Because we demoed out the song, and Carl says, great song. And Carl has been a lifelong Cubs fan. He has always loved the Cubs. As a matter of fact, last spring he went to Mesa, Arizona to see the Cubs in spring training. So he has been big time on the Cubs. And when he heard our demo, he said, bring me aboard. So Carl actually went down to Joliet Junior College and did the tracking of the song with the some of the students at Joliet Junior College. And so that was like December, January. And then I brought in Joe to add his production skills, and we finished off the track in February.
Oh, very good. Well, like I said, I'm talking to Ken Franklin, who is so this is a collaboration between all of you then, right?
Yes, four of us are all equal songwriters.
So one of the writers of the song called Chicago Cubs Family, and, a lot of people have been writing some Cubs songs. We'll see. You certainly have a very good pedigree of people involved in this, and so I want to say thank you for staying up so late or early, whatever the case may be. Good luck with the song, and we might as well, Dan, why don't we just play it out so people can hear a little more of it than just the you know, the chorus there.
And it'll probably be easy, Jim, for anyone to find the song online, to go to iTunes or Amazon to purchase it, but they could just as well go to our website, which is ChicagoCheer.com, ChicagoCheer.com. They'll see our full merchandising store. They'll be able to see a video that we put together. So ChicagoCheer.com will, and they could email us, complain, maybe even some of your audience could call on the Cubs and say, hey, let's play Chicago Cubs family when the Cubs lose a game.
Okay, well, good. Best of luck to you. Congratulations. You put together a winning team on your end, that's for sure. And so thanks to Ken Franklin. Good luck with Chicago Cubs family, and we'll play the song and let people hear what hopes becomes a part of Chicago sports history right now.
Well, thank you, Up and Jim, and thank you, WGN, and hopefully we could come in the studio sometime and the four of us could perform it.
Oh, that'd be great. And have right. a Carnegie Deli. It's got to be an old sandwich by now since they closed in December, but it's still hopefully good, huh?
Well, you could bring the Sprecher's grape soda.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Ken. Here's your song.
Thanks.
Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio here this morning. We will be also here tomorrow morning from 2 to 5. Been having a lot of fun today. Hope you have too, as you either woke up or have been up or are looking to start your day wherever you're at on your own personal clock. Our clock starts at 2 o'clock till 5, and I will be here, and then we will pass it on to the opening bell, and then Steve Cochran. I believe Steve is in today, right, Dan? And he'll be on at 6 to 10, and then off to the races, WGN goes for another day at the good old 720. So, speaking of Chicago, as we do frequently here on the Chicago radio station, guess whose birthday it was yesterday? In fact, you know what? I actually have a list of people whose birthday it was today. Let me see if I can grab that. Yesterday's birthdays included Mel Tillis, the country singer. He used to stutter. He couldn't talk, but when he stuttered, he talked when he stuttered. He stuttered when he talked, but then when he sang perfectly. He was very popular on talk shows because he really, it was a weird kind of thing that where he couldn't speak, and yet he sang perfectly. Dustin Hoffman's birthday yesterday. He turned 80. Dustin Hoffman, the graduate, turned 80 yesterday. Wow. Keith Carradine, 68. Donnie Most, Ralph Malph. Guess how old Ralph Malph is from Happy Days? 64. Wow. And The Edge from U2 was 56. So all those people had birthdays yesterday. But guess who else did? A certain sculpture at the Daily Plaza. That's right. Our Picasso, Chicago's Picasso sculpture, turned 50 years old yesterday. 50 years ago yesterday, it was officially unveiled. The first Mayor Daley. There's nothing better than a fish. Or who, I don't know who this Picasso guy is, but I want to thank him for our beautiful Picasso statue. I don't know what it is, why it is. I hear he's pretty good. So take down the ropes there, and let's see what this damn thing looks like. And when that happened, Chicago, at that point, being a very meat and potato city, when the covering of the Picasso came down, there's some photos. Rick Kogan of the Tribune, I love Rick, and he wrote a great story about this on Sunday about the Picasso and how, you know, Pablo Picasso gave this free of charge to the city of Chicago. Free of charge. This could have, at that time, would have probably cost $100,000, which is a lot of money 50 years ago. And he gave it to the city for free. And it's all, and Chicago has always had an interesting relationship with the Picasso, because you know, Picasso was such an innovator in cubism and such a forerunner in art. And Chicago, over the last 50 years, has slowly become more of an international city. But for the most part, it's always been a meat and potatoes, a beer and shot kind of town. And so for this work of modern art, I mean, if it, you know, usually for people that aren't really into art, when they look at modern art, unless it looks like a tree or a river or a sunrise, what the hell's that? And so here, Pablo Picasso, this world-renowned, international genius artist, dedicates a sculpture to Chicago. And so I'm sure that at the time, Chicago residents are expecting some kind of a statue, like the Statue of Liberty, where you can see there's a woman with a torch. I get it. You know, they're waiting for some kind of a statue, somebody on a horse, or somebody with a, you know, with a cowboy hat on, or somebody with a hard hat on, or, you know, something that epitomizes Chicago that they could all relate to as this working class meat and potatoes, you know, heartland of Chicago City. And then the great coverings come down, and most people are like, what the hell is that? And in fact, you know, some of the leaders of the day were kind of like, not just the citizenry, but even the leaders of the day, as I could only imagine, like I said, the original Richard J. Daley must have been like, if it doesn't have a flower or a tree, I don't know what the heck it is. And that's been the great thing. Picasso never said what it was. And that's not important what it was. What's important is what it represents. And what it really did for Chicago was actually force Chicago, in a way, to begin to look at itself as not just this little heart, you know, this working class city in a bubble, but hey, maybe we are more than that. Because after Picasso did that, I don't know if you know, but on Dearborn, by the, I think it's the Chase Building now, there is a Marc Chagall a mural. A beautiful color Marc Chagall mural. Marc Chagall, one of the great artists of the 20th century. And he was moved to donate that to Chicago after Picasso did. Joan Miró, right across the street from the Picasso, there's a Miró statue. So Chicago suddenly, you know, was becoming more of a cultural place because of that. So, and now we use it in our advertising. It's an iconic part. People still don't know what it is, but it doesn't matter, folks. That's what great art does. It makes you think and it makes you wonder. Now, everybody says, is it an Afghan dog or is it a bird? I heard Mayor Emanuel say, oh, I think it's a bird. Once again, you're not getting it. That's not the point. It's there to make you take it in and look at it and put your own meaning on it. However, if you have any kind, if you've ever seen anything that Picasso has done, I know what you say, what are you talking about? But Picasso was an abstract artist. He was the proponent of cubism, which was deconstructing what we know of and taking those elements and taking them apart. If you look at many of Picasso's paintings, that is a woman. You will see that image when he draws pictures of either his wife or his mistresses. So most likely that is a woman. But once again, it doesn't matter what it is. The fact is that it's here. And we should enjoy it, and we should appreciate it. And after the news, I'm going to tell you how we should better appreciate it. Because I think right now, you know, it's great that kids slide on it and use it as a thing. But it really is an important work of art. There's not many places or cities that have that impressive of a work by Pablo Picasso, perhaps one of the greatest artists of all time, certainly in the 20th century. And we've got one here, and we've had it here for 50 years now, and I think we need to appreciate it a little more than we have, and I'm going to suggest a way that we can. But first, we'll take this break. No switching. That's Paul McCartney and Wings from their Band on the Run album, a song called Picasso's Last Words. And we've got one of our own Picasso's last works, although he did live quite a few years after that. He lived, I think he was almost 90 when he passed away. But yeah, it was the 50th birthday yesterday of the Picasso sculpture in what used to be the Civic Center is now the Daily Plaza. And 50 years ago, yesterday, it was unveiled for the first time. And as I said, it always has been sort of our Chicago's favorite enigma. We appreciate it. As I said, we have come to embrace it. We use it in our marketing. It is a part of the Chicago skyline and pictures and on mugs and everything like that. It's come to symbolize Chicago. At the same time, Chicago still has this kind of weird reaction to it. And we still hear 50 years later, well, what is it and why is it and things like that. And as I said, being a Picasso fan, I've been fortunate enough to see many of his works around the world in some of the great museums. And I've been to the Picasso Museum in Barcelona, where his great Guernica work is. But so I've come to appreciate Picasso. And so, as I said, everybody wonders what it is. It's not important what it is, but I do believe, based on some of the other paintings and drawings I've seen of Picasso, that many times he did portray the women in his life with this similar look. So, yes, it looks like an Afghan dog or maybe a bird because of the wings. But in his cubist perspective, this is the way many times he drew and portrayed the women of his life, whether it was his wife or his mistresses. And so I do believe it's a woman, which actually would make sense in that, you know, Picasso in maybe a way was donating a mother to watch over the city. I mean, maybe you can look at it that way. If it's a female figure, it's a female figure or a motherly figure to watch over the city. Once again, just a thought. But that's the idea. It's there to provoke ideas. It's there for you to take a look at it and decide what it is or what its meaning is or how you feel about it. That's why Picasso never gave it a name, never explained it. But in the good old, as I said, meat and potatoes time of Chicago, we like things real literally. We want a Chicago hot dog has mustard and onions and celery salt and peppers on it. No ketchup. That's a Chicago hot dog. So when we get a new statue, we want to know what the heck it is. So ironically, some of the great people of, and some of the movers and shakers and opinion makers of the day, when it was unveiled, were not impressed at all with this. In fact, one of the great Chicagoans and one of the great Chicago commentators of Chicago was the great Mike Royko. And here's what Royko wrote when the statue was unveiled in 1967. He wrote, "The Picasso has a long, stupid face. It looks like some giant insect that is about to eat a smaller, weaker insect. It has eyes that are pinless. Mean. But why not? Everybody said it had the spirit of Chicago. And from 1,000 miles away, accidentally or on purpose, Chicago has captured it. Right up to the ugly face is the spirit of Al Capone and the cop scandals and the settlers who took the Indians but good. Its eyes are like the eyes of every slum owner who made a buck off the small and weak, and of every building inspector who took a wad of cash from a slum owner to make it all possible. Any big-time real estate operator will be able to look into the face of this Picasso and see the spirit that makes the city's rebuilding possible and profitable. It's all there in that Picasso thing, the I will spirit, the I will get you before you get me spirit. Picasso has never been here, they say. You'd think he'd been writing the L all his life." So what's so great about Royko is he gets right to the nub of it. He brings in, of course, the cronyism and the corruption that it so much at that time identified Chicago and to some extent still does. But at the same time, he was actually saying, it does symbolize Chicago. Maybe not in the way you would want it to be, but maybe it does. And that's the point. My point is exactly what Royko said. You can look at that and make it anything you want to be. But what it really is, what we know it is, it's Chicago's. It's ours. And we should embrace it. And so here's my take on it. You know, I frequently drive past there all the time, and I like everyone else. I mean, born and raised on the northwest side of Chicago, I've come down to town all the time. I've worked downtown. I've driven past it. I've walked past it. I've gone to the Christmas market right there, and it's just sitting there. And sometimes you don't even look at it. You don't even look up at it. You take it for granted. And as I said, once again, this is a major work of art by one of the world's greatest artists. There are cities around the world that would kill to have an original Picasso like that. And so I think, A, we need to appreciate it more. But what I also think we need to do, after 50 years, I think it's time it gets a new location. I think it's time to move the Picasso to somewhere where it deserves to be more highlighted, more appreciated, and more seen as a work of art, as opposed to being seen as it is now, I think, as just part of the scenery. Because it's been there for 50 years, and it's, you know, 50 years ago, the Civic Center at that time, now Daley Plaza, was the center of the city. It is where people congregated. It is where people came. That's why Marshall Fields, now Macy's, is close in the area. But now Chicago is spread out, and we've got Millennium Park, which is now the new showcase. We have one of the great architects of the 20th and 21st century, Frank Gehry's pavilion there. We've got the Bean there as a work of art. So clearly, Millennium Park is a place for art. We've got those fountains with the faces. That's a meeting place now for tourism and for Chicago people to come and relax and get away from it all. It certainly is in Central Park. That's something unto itself. But that's our version of Central Park, if you will. And the Picasso, I think, is being lost and wasted. It's sitting amongst a bunch of government buildings. It's got the Daley Plaza behind it. It's got, you know, the county building and city hall next door. Those are old and drab buildings. You know, the Daley Plaza building is brown. Sometimes the Picasso even blends in with it. How great would the Picasso look at Millennium Park on its own, with the sky and the park and the lake behind it, and really be able to be appreciated as a work of art and not just some kind of thing that's sitting in Daley Plaza. And you know what? Kids slide on it now. The park is where kids play. So I think 50 years in Daley Plaza is enough. Let's give this Picasso its due as a work of art near the Chicago Art Institute as well. But let's put it in a prominent place, at a place now that we have just built that draws both citizens as well as tourism, and show that Picasso off. And how great, once again, as a city, to have a Gehry and a Picasso in the same area. That's world-class stuff, folks. That's international city kind of stuff. You know, the Bean has taken on a prominent place, a tourist attraction. Not so much of just because of what it is, but where it is. People are seeing it. People are interacting with it. Everybody's looking at the Bean and looking at themselves. It's because there is a influx of people there that they're interacting. They're forced to interact with that piece of art. And I don't believe that the Picasso in Daley Center now, where people are not congregating as much as they were, except for some special event. Think about it. You know who sees the Picasso on a daily basis now? People who are on trial. Convicts. Lawyers and defendants. That's who sees the Picasso most these days. A lot of tourists are probably not getting to, when they come to Chicago, they're probably not going to Daley Plaza. They're going, we're trying to push them to Millennium Park. Let's continue to bolster Millennium Park. For years, I was complaining how the Christmas tree did not belong in Daily Center anymore, because that's not where people congregate. I've been saying for years, move the official Chicago Christmas tree to Millennium Park, and now they've done it. I'm not saying they did it because of me, but I'm saying it's just common sense. So, yes, the Picasso has had a nice 50-year run at Daily Center, but we've got a showcase place now. We've got a Frank Gehry Pavilion. We've got the Bean. We've got Maggie Daly Park. We've got the ice skating rink. We're upgrading and drawing people to Millennium Park. Lollapalooza's at Grant Park. You know, 100,000 people a day. We're drawing people to there. Let's give the Picasso its due. It's a Pablo Picasso work of art, folks. It deserves to be in a place of prominence where it not only would stand with other works of art, but it would look great there. It would be in a place of prominence where it could actually show off its prominence on its own. Right now, it's hidden. It's fading into the landscape where it is. And as I said, what a great picture to have a Gehry and a Picasso standing tall above that park with sky behind it, not some ugly building. We didn't have Millennium Park. When the Picasso came here, there was nowhere else to put it. That was railroad ties. We've got this beautiful park here. Let's move it and give the Picasso the prominence and respect that it deserves, because Chicago has a great gift here, and I think we've taken our Picasso a little for granted. So on her 50th birthday, I say, everybody likes to move, have a new place to live. She's lived there for 50 years. Let's give her a new view and give us a chance to view her in a new way. That's just my thought. Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio, Walk of Famer, Nick DiGilio. This morning, started at 2. Can't believe we've only got 9 minutes left. Wow, that went by fast. Always does when I'm on the radio. Love, 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 love doing it. And I'm really excited because I'm actually going to be filling in tomorrow as well. 2 in a row. Wow. I'm like Lou Gehrig. Nick DiGilio is Wally Pipp right now. You shouldn't have taken off this week, Nick. 2 shows in a row. Wow. Can I handle it? In fact, I'm actually excited. I'll be on tomorrow morning from 2 to 5. And I just found out I'll be filling in on Sunday morning for Dean Richards from 9 to 12. And apparently then after that, Dean will be hosting a special Alzheimer's special from 12 to 3. So I will be filling in for Dean on his regular show from 9 to 12, an hour shorter. And then from 12 to 3, there will be a special Alzheimer's special, which Dean will be hosting. So I will be on Sunday morning as well, and we'll be doing some fun entertainment-related stuff as Dean does. And then I just found out on Monday from 9 to 11, I will also be filling in. Apparently, I don't know if Justin Kaufman is off or they're splitting the shift. I'm not sure what's going on. But I will be on from 9 to 11, not the full show. I guess someone else is going to be filling in from 7 to 9. But I will be on from 9 to 11. So I'll be on tomorrow from 2 to 5 a.m. And then I will be on Sunday morning from 9 to noon in the morning. And then on Monday night from 9 to 11. So mark those down on your calendar. It's Elton Jim Palooza. Wow. It's like a real job. I haven't had that in a couple of years. But I do want to thank all my guests today. Mick Kaler earlier today, and Ken Franklin, who wrote a Chicago Cubs song, called us and stayed up late in New York. Also, David Jennings and Esmeralda Leon. And I'm looking up at my monitor, and there's Mary Vandeveld. I don't know if she can hear me or not, but there's good old Mary Vandeveld. Used to work with her. And thank you to Dave Jennings for doing news today. And the Sugar Man. That's your new nickname, by the way.
I'll take it.
Sugar Man. Sugar, sugar. Bah, 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 bah. Dan Shugrue, who has helped me out considerably. This is the first time that Dan and I had a chance. I filled in for Nick in the past, but I never worked with you before.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, and we'll try to do it again tomorrow. And what have I got planned tomorrow? Oh, yeah, we've got a Beatles historian, Robert Rodriguez, who will be joining us in the studio. I'm a huge Beatle fan. And the Fest for Beatle Fans. You can't call it Beatle Fest anymore. The Beatles actually came down on these guys. They've been doing this for, like, what, 30 or 40 years. But they had to change the name for the Fest for Beatle Fans. Every year, it's held on a weekend at the Hyatt Regency out at O'Hare. So this upcoming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the city will be overtaken with Beatle fans at the Fest for Beatle Fans. And one of Chicago's great Chicago Beatle fans, Terry Hemmert, is always the MC, and they've got a great list of different bands and Beatle tribute bands and people from the Beatles' past. I think even George Harrison's sister is going to be there this year. So we'll talk about what is on the agenda for Beatle Fest, as well as our panelist, a Beatle historian named Robert Rodriguez, will be joining us. So we'll be talking about Beatle Fest. I'm going to certainly talk about the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper, which we are currently celebrating this year, as well as maybe some other Beatles stuff, that Beatle news bubbling under, because the Beatles these days are always making news, it seems. So we'll have fun with that, and we'll also do a little pop culture club segment, which I talk about pop culture topics and stuff. So we've got a full little deal there all scheduled out. And we always keep things light and loose for your participation. So by all means, the phone number is always open when I'm on at 312-981-7200. Really quickly, so do you think we're going to talk to Steve Grzanich or no?
We're still waiting for the indication.
Okay, so because Steve Grzanich will be following this show with the opening bell program. And at 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran and his dysfunctional family will stroll in and take you through until 10. And then Bill and Wendy. And then we've got what Steve does, the Wind Trust Hour.
Yep.
And then we got John Williams, and then Ro Khan, and then Justin Kaufman, and then Patty Vasquez, and then me again, back 24 hours from now. Unbelievable. Real quickly, can you believe that Jay Cutler has got a job? This guy falls butt backward into more opportunities than I've ever seen in my life. I mean, 8 years as Bears quarterback with practically no success, made a ton of money, retires without any experience in broadcasting, aside from a radio show for 10 minutes of just him talking. He lands a plum color analyst job with Fox on their main broadcast. Just out of the blue. He was a pariah in the league, couldn't get a job, gets a job, and then how do the stars align? The only coach in all of NFL football who would even think of hiring him was a guy he worked with 2 years ago at the Bears, and he loses his number one quarterback. And so now he signs a $10 million contract to play football again. Gosh, can I use his luck? No switching.